we talk a little bit about behavior modification. Everybody knows about behavior modification, and behavior modification has an illusion of simplicity. It looks very simple. Why? It's simple. If the kid's good, you reward him. If he's bad, you punish him. So people on their own make charts, et cetera, to try to shape behaviors. If it's a normal kid, regular kid, and it's regular behaviors, fine, do it. There's nothing wrong with it. The best, but don't overdo it with the actual prizes. In other words, every time the kid, let's say you want to reward, you want to teach your kid to clean up his room. So you want to reward him every day he cleans up his room. You don't have to get him a new action figure every time he cleans up his room. There are 365 days in the room. I'm not sure if there are 365 action figures. You're going to be in a lot of trouble. You can do stars, checks. Some people have stores. You know, you gain a certain amount of money, and then you can buy things. Nice way to teach kids budgeting and delay of gratification, because they can earn more money, save it longer, and buy bigger things or spend it right away. A very nice reward, it doesn't have to be things. A very nice reward is going out with daddy for ice cream. It can be relationships, which is what really is important in life. However, if your kid is struggling, and if your kid is having a hard time with a particular behavior, the kid has problems controlling his temper, the kid has problems organizing himself for homework, whatever it is, there are people that go to graduate school. There are people that learn how to do behavior modification. It is an art. It's a science. And if you do it wrong, in a way, you're doing more harm than good. Because now, when you come to the professional and he wants to introduce some sort of behavior modification, the kid's already soured to it. And there's an art to it. So for the complicated behaviors, the kid's struggling, get some. If you feel confident yourself to read up on it and follow a proven program, a 1-2-3 magic, or I mentioned somebody else, Ross Green's book on the explosive child. If you have something where there's like a real format that you can follow, great. If not, they're professionals. And we're trained to do this. And there is an art to it. And if you do it wrong, you can do more harm than good. Also, there are certain children, and apropos to this, when I'm talking about the situations with, you know, in terms of kids with special problems. There are, you know, we although parenting is important, and although we do impart to our children self-control and discipline, there are children who are born with inherently, constitutionally, difficulties controlling themselves. They're just like we're born with different physical features, we're born with different temperaments. And there are certain children, we have all sorts of fancy medical-sounding names for them, but that's irrelevant. There are some kids who have a hard time controlling themselves. They have some kids that are very aggressive. It's their makeup. And in fact, if you would think about it, it's probably in your background. It's probably, you know, your husband's fault, you know, because you know, it's in his genes, you know. It's, I know who's, I see what the numbers are here, you know. They, you know, it, and those kids, again, you may have to pick your battles, or you may have to be careful, because, again, a kid like that, you can get into a routine where you're constantly yelling at them, constantly screaming, constantly punishing, and then it gets personal. And then you have the same thing I had before, Joseph, bad boy. You know, you have this thing where just everybody's always yelling at me. It becomes their identity. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If it's a kid like that, you may have to pick your battles. You may have to get some professional help. You may have to work on hierarchies. Again, let me just give a sort of simple example. If you have a kid who can't clean up his room, the room's an absolute mess, and it's beyond him, you know, to really keep that room clean, then you break down the behavior. Say, you know what? If you put your dirty laundry in the hamper, you get a star or something like that. Forget the rest of the room. And sometimes you have to almost like turn a blind eye to other things if you're working very much on one behavior. Don't completely ignore it, because you don't want to become a doormat, but you sort of respond less stridently to other behaviors because you're focusing on this particular behavior. Another, by the way, very nice approach, if it's a behavior where the kid's really struggling or it's a kid having a hard time and the normal discipline doesn't work, is instead of disciplining to stop one behavior, to try to promote the opposite behavior. A very simple example would be a kid who calls out in class, instead of punishing for calling out, reward him for raising his hand. Something that I know that I was involved with the day camp once, which had a behavior mod program, and there was a problem with kids insulting each other and saying hurtful things and taunting one another. So instead of punishing the children for taunting, they had set up a reward program for complimenting. And it's, again, the antidote, and sometimes by changing the behavior, then you change your attitude as well. Okay. Oh, we're almost done. Okay. One more thing. Children learn at a very young age that nothing distracts parents or mobilizes parents more than misconduct. And let me paint the scene for you, okay? It's Friday afternoon, and you're busy getting ready for Shabbat, and your oldest daughter comes home and says, Mommy, Mommy, I got 100 in the spelling test. I'm so proud of you. Put it in the refrigerator and go on with your day. And then the son comes and says, Mommy, Mommy, I have a student of the week. Oh, I'm so proud of you. We're going to call Grandma and Grandpa later, and you go on with your day. Third kid comes and says, Mommy, the principal wants to hear you. I got into a fight with another kid, and before I broke his bone, I broke the glass in his office, and he thinks that maybe I should belong in a different school. Drop everything. What? What's going on? What's going on? Really? Next thing you know, a kid who wants attention, or a kid who wants to distract the parents from things that are going on with them, knows at a very young age that nothing works better than misconduct. And sometimes the kid who is chronically misbehaving is actually doing that, is actually trying to draw the attention to himself. A kid where, let's say, the parents are involved in some conflict or are having problems will misbehave because he'll know then he's distracting the parents. He'd rather incur the wrath upon himself than to have to deal with the parents' discord, etc. So sometimes the misbehavior is not a matter of just discipline. It's a child's attempt to distract the parents or to draw attention to himself. Also, by the way, kids are not precise. I mentioned this in the previous group. They're not precise with their feelings. And whereas sometimes misbehavior is just they haven't been instructed, they haven't been disciplined properly, sometimes misbehavior is an expression of some other concerns. A child who's depressed, or a child who's having anxiety or something like that, or a child who may have been exposed to something that he can't handle or something might have been harmful to him, will begin to misbehave. And it's their way of sometimes crying for help. And you've got to be particularly alerted to any kind of misbehavior that occurs very suddenly, where it's very dramatic change. And also, if a kid that you know generally is responsive to discipline, is responsive to parental interventions, and is suddenly misbehaving, there may be another agenda. One more, and maybe I can just conclude with this, and it sort of goes back to what I said in the beginning. It's really, I think it's a safe bet to say, it's really never been harder to raise children. We don't have the same, you know, the kids are very independent. They're getting, I go back to the old Yankee Stadium in New York, and if any of you are, this place, New York, is, in the old Yankee Stadium, around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, this shadow would descend upon the stadium. And the great philosopher Yogi Berra used to say, it gets late very early out here. Children are getting old very young. It is very hard. Try to avoid, if your kid is misbehaving, or for that matter, if your neighbor's kid, your brother or sister's kid is acting up, is out of control, try to avoid the blame. Try to avoid the finger pointing. There's constitutional factors, as I said. There are other situations. It doesn't help. It's not productive. And what typically happens then is if a parent feels blamed or if a parent... I mean, one of the things I hear again and again, and if there are parents who have been through this, they'll know what I'm talking about. The phone phobia, that when the phone rings, your heart skips a beat because you don't know if it's the principal or if it's another neighbor saying they don't want your kid over or something like that, where parents literally become phobic about the phone. If a kid, a parent, if a friend of yours, or if you yourself are having a hard time with a kid, you can be doing everything right and the kid's struggling. You can be doing everything wrong, and some kids are just inherently so put together that they somehow figure it out. Avoid the finger pointing. Yes, if a kid's struggling, you got to examine. You got to self-examine. You got to read the books. You got to go for the help. But don't point fingers. And not all kids are the same. All kids are equally easy to raise. Some kids, they're just born and they run around life making nachas, and other kids eat your kishkas out the whole way. Just the way it is in life. Okay, we have about 15 minutes, I guess, so why don't we have some give and take? Oh, you were very anxious to ask a question, right? Yeah, right, okay. Mm-hmm. You never... Okay. Right. Much harder with teenagers. The thing with teenagers... I'm sorry. Okay. The thing with teenagers, first of all, teenagers do need limits. Sometimes the metaphor that I use with teenagers is, if you look at it like a fence, when the kid becomes a teen, you expand the perimeter of the fence. But where you drive in the post, you drive them in solidly. So the kids, you give them more leeway. They're older. You can't treat them the same as when they were younger. And you don't do the simple kind of reward punishment type of thing. But they do need discipline. The problem is today there are quite a number of teens that don't respond or won't respond. And You know, and they have, again, this sense of autonomy, et cetera. I mean, it used to be a thing where you could threaten the kid to throw him out of the home, and that would be a threat. Today's not a threat because there are plenty of kids living out there in the street, you know. So it's not even a threat. But you never cease to be a parent. You are still a parent, and you have expectations. And whereas maybe your enforcement may be more limited or maybe impossible, you don't stop being a parent. And therefore, I would tell you again and again, just because the kids are with you, again and again, you say, listen, I still expect you home at midnight. What are you going to do about it? There's nothing I can do. Because it's much more effective to admit to the kid, if there's something you can do, fine. If you can say, I'll take away the car keys or something like that, or I'll you know, limit this, limit that, okay, fine. But if it's not going to work, or if it's going to develop into one of these tit-for-tat kind of things, if the kids, and a lot of kids like that. And again, it's not because you did something wrong. A lot of teenagers that's where they're holding. If you don't have it, then you can say, I don't have what I can do. But I still want you home at 12 o'clock. Because you're still a parent. And you never compromise, you don't compromise your parental dignity. And I want to tell you something. I do a lot of work with teenagers. Some of the toughest, roughest kind of kids. They don't want to upset their parents. It still means something. It's still there. And in fact, sometimes, if you go with the back and forth, if you do the tit for tat kind of things, oh yeah, then I'll do this, and then I'll do this, and I'll do that, you so back them in a corner, now they have to defy you. If you just make it your point and say, now it's up to you, so then they haven't backed themselves into a corner yet. Good. Right. Did you mean midnight here, or do you mean midnight in Denver? You know, right, yeah, I know. Okay, yeah. Yeah, right, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Depends on the kid and where the kid's holding. If you still have leverage and you still have control, you listen. This, again, as I said, sometimes a threat is enough. Look, I know you came in 2 hours late. I'm going to look the other way this time, but it happens again, da-da-da-da. Because I always want that warning ahead of time. If you have that control, okay? If you don't have that control, you don't say, okay, well, look, you're going to come home 2:30 anyway, so now it's 2:30. You don't do that. You stick to your guns. You say, listen, I expect you home at 12 o'clock. And you can say to them, there's a reason for it. Things happen. You don't have the strength. You're exhausted the rest of the week. You're not doing well in school. Teenagers, you can give reasons. But you don't stop being a parent. Now I'm going to take away your car keys, and then I'm going to steal the car keys anyway. So then I'm going to call the police. Or I'll call the police on you. Anyway, before you know it, you don't even remember what you're arguing about anymore. And teens are great at getting that you don't get into. This is the rules. This is what I expect. Yeah, go ahead. Sometimes that's it depends on the kid. You know, maybe the kid's saying no because literally he isn't tired. Maybe it's, yeah. I mean, but if this is constantly the behavior, if it's just about the bedtime and you want to give him that leverage and you know darn well in 10 minutes he's going to go to sleep, that's fine, you know, that's okay. But if it's about everything, because again, and I'm going to tell you the same thing, I'm going to sound repetitive, it's the early Alzheimer's, you know. Fast forward to light later on in life. Fast forward to adulthood. In adulthood, he has to know that there's certain rules. You know, can you imagine the IRS, I don't know, whatever you have here in Canada, you know, the taxation department comes to you and says, you have to pay taxes. He says, no. You see, are they going to give you? I mean, what are they going to give you? So it depends. But if it's just this issue, yeah, you have to be creative and you have to be flexible and by the way, especially certain kind of kids, there's certain kids that are very oppositional and headstrong, et cetera. And if you're getting, it's the same like I said, if you're screaming about everything, then it's like screaming about nothing. If you're getting in power struggles about everything, then that's just the nature of the relationship. So sometimes the best thing is not to get into the power struggle. Say, fine, you want to be exhausted. Listen, you're getting up tomorrow at 7 o'clock no matter what time you go to sleep. And now you decide when you go to bed. Now you took all the fun away from them because you're not going to fight with you. So that's okay. Sure. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Right. Right.
No matter what, you have to have patience, you have to have hunger, but when it's always the same here, finger pointing, because there's always that one upsetting the apple cart.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
Okay? And like you said, the kid's already in that position. It becomes a self within the family, within the other siblings, within everything.
It's a very good question. Yeah.
Even though you work on the positive experience, everything, you know, all the books tell you things, it still has that kid where no matter how much individual time you do with that kid, no matter how much you spend the one-on-one, you know, more than any other kid, that kid's behaviors and inherent to
right.
How you disciple.
Okay. First of all, yeah, a few things, because you raise a few good points. First of all, I want to tell you something that I see sometimes in my office. Sometimes I get referrals from the what's called the ultra-Orthodox community, the Haredi community. I don't like ultra-Orthodox. It sounds like a type of gasoline, but, you know, it's, the Haredi community, right? And they'll have 12 kids, 11 of whom are absolute superstars, and smack in the middle is the kid with the nose ring. You know, and they'll say, you know, like, I raised them all the same, you know? Like, what is it? You know, every kid is different. And every kid, it's a chanochas anah al pi darko. You have to, like, every single kid is really like a new book. So it's true that, so you can throw out all the parenting books. You got to write a book about each kid, okay? Now, what you're alluding to, by the way, is something very interesting that I think you're sort of saying, is that sometimes a kid has a role in the family as being the one who bucks the authority. And the other kids are feeding off of it. And it becomes like, oh, yeah, wait till you try to get so-and-so to bed, right? Yeah, we'll go. But yeah, and the rest of the kids are laughing while you're having this major battle with that kid. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about? Not quite.
No, it's sort of that. Mm-hmm. No, not that. It's just like you think.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Genetic makeup.
Right.
Feeding your kids.
Right. Okay. Right. Right.
So you can't treat that child the same.
That's right.
So my problem is how do you break the chain?
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So let me see if I'm answering your question. Okay. We have a term, and I really don't like using these terms because they're very medical, but we have a term called ODD. Anybody hear of ODD? Oppositional Defiant Disorder. These are kids who are extremely, like a negativistic. They can't just comply. It's against their nature. It's their build, and again, you know, the husband's like that, and the Zadie's like that. You know, it's. And by the way, these are often, by the way, very creative people and very headstrong people. I'm giving you two examples of you want to hear two examples of ODD? How many people have heard of Bernard Baruch? Right, the great investor, the multimillionaire. You know what his theme was in terms of investments? His motto was, when everybody else buys, I sell. When everybody else sells, I buy. It's ODD. Oppositional. But he made millions. My favorite ODD story is Natan Sharansky. You all know who Natan Sharansky is, right? Okay? So Natan, and you all remember the Avital Sharansky, everything she went through in terms of trying to get him to, you know, trying to free him up 5 minutes. Okay. So this is a guy who took on the whole Soviet Union. He lived Khanakalikht in Siberia, took on the whole Soviet Union. Finally, a day came, he was going to be freed. And the KGB brought him to a bridge, and the other side of the bridge is his wife, the Israelis, the Americans, everything he's been fighting for 12 years, something like that, you see, right? And the KGB agent took him out of the car, he took off his handcuffs, he said, now walk straight across the bridge. Anybody know what he did? He walked in a zigzag across the bridge. So the very end, he wasn't going to do what they told him to do. All right? And there are people like that, okay? And it's like poison. It's toxic to them to comply. There's several ways to deal with these kinds. One thing is, once they become teenagers, and by the way, this generally applies to teens. One of the other things that hallmarks of teenagers are that they develop a self-concept. They define themselves. So at that age, and I've done this with these kinds of teens, you sit them down and you tell them, this is who you are. This is your nature. And I appreciate that and I understand that. And by the way, as I said, these are often creative people because they think outside the box. But I can't let you get away with these things. I have other kids, et cetera, et cetera. So I acknowledge it between you and me. And you know what? Maybe I'll pull you aside and I'll tell you about the rule I'm about to tell, and you can give me a rough time individually, but you can't do it in front of the other kids. Once you acknowledge that, once you recognize that about them, then it becomes more palatable. But these are the kind of kids where, A, you got to pick your battles, and it might even mean adjusting with the other siblings because it's just toxic to them, and if you constantly get loggerheads with them, then it becomes their identity. Yes. Right. Right. That's the risk.
Battle.
That's right.
You turn your head and you figure you're going to discipline on the things that are really, really important. You're going to let, like you say, the cycle. mm-hmm. an oppositional
right.
character.
Right.
So, but then the thing is they sort of get away with, you know, my old
thing. You know what works great with these kids? You know what works great with these kids is humor. You joke, you pull them aside on a one-to-one. You avoid the head-on collision. The only thing, sometimes you have to. And if you capture, then you got to stick to your guns and slug it out. But these are kids that work. You work much more effectively through the back door. However, what's very important, as I said, with those kind of kids, is that once they reach adolescence, they know this about themselves. Because again, they get out there in the world, and not everybody's going to take the trouble to figure out that they're an ODD kid. They're like Nathan Sharansky. They're not going to, you know, they have to know that they have a hard time just following, you know, just following the rules, just following the straight and narrow path, and they got to catch themselves. But yeah, they're those difficult kids. So and that's a certain type of kid. Yeah. Huh? About ODD. Spirited Child. Yeah. Okay. I just thought of a book. It's called The Spirited Child. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
They have a child who is willful.
Yeah.
But also has a very strong sense of conscience.
Oh, what a mix. Oh, my God.
Believe in self-punishment once... my view, I don't know whether the self-punishment is manipulation, but certainly...
They're about 30 pounds, like to switch places with you. Yeah, you got to be careful about that. The self-punish, the self-punitive kind of behaviors, very careful, and I would punish the self-punitive behaviors. Yeah. So that's not acceptable. Because that, if that becomes a habit, if that becomes... You see, again, with children, they're still malleable. But if we leave things alone, if that becomes part of his repertoire, that can be a very hard nut to crack. I punish you. That's it. I'm the one in charge. You don't do that to yourself. That's not acceptable. Just plain and simple. You nip it in the bud right away.
Okay. He says, I'm not going to eat any supper now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that kind of thing, you know. Laugh it off. Absolutely. Oh, by the way, one more thing also. Okay, that's the last thing. Never punish with food, guys. Never send the kid to bed without supper. No dessert, that's okay. Food is not a punishment, okay? Great. Okay, thank you.